It is the Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis for another day of broadcast insolence.
Many thanks to our Chicago Bears for what they did, how thrilling it was to be where we are, to watch them as fans. What a game. What a moment in Bears history.
Now, you
I was at that game. Grown men were crying, and we were all hugging strangers, and no one wanted to leave, and it was just an awesome feeling. I don't remember the last time Soldier Field was that electric, and I heard Matt Nagy use the same word. I was using it all day because it was so true. These fans were, oh my gosh, engaged in this team and just loving every minute of it.
I will ask you this question. It's an important question.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the air raid siren? There is great controversy about the use of an air raid siren sound effect during third down plays. And there are longstanding Bears fans who are very insulted by the notion that this cheap trick is being used to try to get them to get amped up when they all know to get amped up.
You know, the third downs were crazy. The amount of amped upness it worked, whatever it was. It totally worked. People were standing every third down. They had these little rally towels they gave to you if you went to the game, and everyone had their rally towels out, and it was crazy. The energy there. It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I don't think why people didn't like the air raid thing?
Yes, there's a controversy today about the air raid siren.
Yeah.
Because this is the first time last week and this week, last Sunday night and then yesterday, it was the first time they've used the air raid siren. A lot of stadiums around the country use it for third down situations. They need it more in L.A. to alarm people.
That there's actually a third down taking place.
Right. And they also start to think that, maybe, is that North Korea? is that North Korea?
Let me check my phone.
What
see
is
if there's
going
an
on?
Update.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they
no.
would, I mean, I don't know.
I don't care what it worked. Whatever happened, maybe the fans didn't need it. That was the point, that without it, I think fans would have been equally as crazy and engaged. But it was, oh my gosh.
All right. Well, I know there's trouble here. I'm not all that upset about it. I like when the whole thing is loud.
Yes.
Right, I don't mind the thing being boisterous. It's pretty boisterous this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the games that I've been to have been incredibly loud. People, there's a different feeling here, Andy Mazur, than there has been in years. I mean, I gotta say, this defense is as good as the 1980s.
I agree. I mean, and they're playing so well. And I think that this is a likable team, a much more likable coaching staff as well.
And players. Quarterback is much more popular.
I know. Sorry, coach. But it's the fact. And just the way that Matt Nagy kind of handles himself, he made time yesterday right after the game ended. He wanted to visit with the McCaskey family just to tell them thank you and to enjoy the
class.
Tell them thank you.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Thank them for giving him the opportunity to coach the team. And then, of course, they go to Club Dub and they, you know, all heck breaks loose. And now they're off celebrating for a little bit.
Yeah, I don't celebrate too much because we do have any idea if Eddie Jackson's going to play?
You know, it was interesting. He touched on it today in his press conference, but there's no updates. They were both he and Aaron Lynch were getting evaluated again today, and they're waiting for test results. But he did say he didn't feel like they were either of them were season ending.
Okay.
That's good to hear.
So that's definitely good.
So getting through the next two games, although they don't really have to win the next two to stay in the playoffs, but if they want to move up, there was a very important thing that happened last night, late last night. Where you have the Los Angeles Rams in Los Angeles losing, which is
huge.
A big, big, big deal. So now there's only one game separating the Bears and the Rams from home field advantage and a bye in the first round.
That's key. And I think the Bears broke the Rams because they looked broken yesterday as well.
Isn't that weird? They were just on such a roll, and the Bears played them and held them to, what, 6 points? Field goals?
Yeah, 6 points.
Jared Goff, who, by the way, is a quarterback there, and I loved him in La La Land. I thought he was excellent. But
he looks like a different quarterback in his last two games.
He was awful.
He was, yeah, I think he's shell-shocked.
What?
I mean, let me be honest with you. There's going to be Aaron Rodgers may want to retire as opposed to seeing Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack tackled Aaron Rodgers with the wrong part of his body.
With his back.
An ability. You can't tackle a guy with your back.
No.
And he did.
The back sack. The Mack back sack.
Yeah.
Did we know that the back sack existed, Andy, in the sports world? Have you ever seen this before?
No, we've heard of the butt fumble, the butt sack, but never the back sack. Yeah. So there's something new.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
This guy.
Yeah, he had this guy.
This guy.
Oh, this guy
I can't believe it. So I can't believe it.
The stat for Khalil Mack right now is he has 12 and a half sacks. The Oakland Raiders as a team have 12. So thank you again, Coach Gruden.
We have to write him a thank you note, a Christmas card. I think that'd be appropriate.
Maybe a Christmas
love
song.
Love Bears fans.
For John Gruden. A little something for John Gruden.
Uh-huh.
Thanking him and the whatever they are now, Oakland Raiders.
Or
Las Vegas Raiders, whatever they're going to be, organization for. Did you say they don't even have a stadium next year?
Yeah, I know. They may have to play in San Diego next year.
Which is really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have ticked off Oakland, and Oakland has ticked them off, Alameda County Stadium, as that team may not even have a home. This Gruden, he was a good choice. He's the chaos head coach, is what that guy is.
King of chaos.
And right. I now have something to add to my Christmas wish list, the light-up Bears sweater that Mitch Trubisky was wearing, controlled by Bluetooth.
It was nice of him to ask the media if they wanted the lights on or they wanted the lights off during his post-game interview.
Isn't that cool of him?
Everybody said on, so he kept them on.
Unfortunately, they're out of stock, so it's very hard to get a hold.
This is a magical season, though. I was listening to, even when Ed and when Ed Obradovich and you get that kind of a Bears play, guy from the 60s, his fingers are gnarled, and he's still got a little bit of, I'm still mad about 1968, right? Is it? When a guy like that goes, this is a magical season.
Oh, I love it when he says that.
That is a big deal. He'll be on with us at 4:40 to talk to us about that. That was really fun to listen to he and Hampton yesterday saying really positive things when it didn't start like that this year.
It did not.
And probably deservingly so. Yeah. It seems to be just gelling in this magical way.
All right. Everybody stand by. We're going to check in with Ben Bradley in the WGN-TV newsroom. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the news?
Has a looming teacher strike in High School District 211 been averted?
Hey Bears fans, enter for your chance to win two spots on the all-inclusive Bears fan trip to Cancun at chicagotribune.com/monster giveaway, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune.
And Bradley joins us right now from the WGN-TV newsroom.
Good afternoon to you guys.
Benjamin?
Hello.
Hello, Ben.
All right. Okay, I got a question for you. Did I get this right? That there are... Hold on a second. I got to get the camera shot properly because I want my full expression to be seen on the CLTV as I ask you this question.
Jacket, yes. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Pedro, am I to believe a story today that there are a bevy of Chicago aldermen who are going to be meeting with Elon Musk to discuss the super... Digger Hyperloop concept that Elon Musk is trying to sell to the city of Chicago?
So I don't know that they're specifically meeting with Elon Musk, but I can confirm for you that 8 Chicago aldermen will be shot through a mile-long tube tomorrow evening at approximately 125 to 155 miles per hour.
Uh-huh.
This is where we're going to test it?
Yes. So this is the test.
Can I choose the 8 that you have to go?
Can we all vote for that? That would be great.
I can tell you Ed Burke is not on the list.
Damn
he is otherwise.
If I were him, I'd get on that thing. Where else can I get to the center of the earth on this thing?
Taking nominations.
Yeah, no. Kerry Austin, Anthony Beal, Jason Irvin, Matt O'Shea, Rod Sawyer, among the aldermen who are going out tomorrow to Los Angeles, Hawthorne, California, to be specific, as the Boring Company conducts its test. They've got this mile-long test track underground, and they're going to lower the aldermen underground to the track. They'll be put in a vehicle, and they will be shown how this
out of a gun,
works.
Through a tunnel in Southern California, earthquake-prone Southern California.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait. What do they have in existence already that they're testing?
So they have been working on this underground test track in Hawthorne for quite a while, and they just completed it December 10th. So,
Are they the first? Please tell me they're the first. Oh, please.
Hey, we need a couple of guys to test this out.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I can imagine Matt O'Shea in a leather helmet. I'm ready to go.
No, I just talked to Alderman Sawyer. He's very excited about it. And, a lot of questions about whether or not this Hyperloop that Rahm Emanuel announced with Elon Musk with great fanfare many months ago would still happen. Not only do you have Elon Musk... is having some erratic behavior, but
oh no, really?
Mayor Rahm Emanuel also surprising everyone when he decided not to run, and so this is a sign that progress is being made, and these aldermen are going to be around a lot longer than the mayor, presumably, and so far, all systems go. This Hyperloop would connect O'Hare with downtown Chicago, Block 37 to be specific, that long-shuttered super station underground that the city spent hundreds of millions
and
of dollars
Elon
on.
Now, this is a Boeing project, but Elon Musk is involved because he's...
Boring. His Boring Company.
Oh, this is Boring.
Very
Boeing.
Exciting, but the name of the company is Boring.
So this is, so the Boring... This is all Musk.
As a whole.
Yeah, this is Musk's company. Yeah, so he says he has developed essentially new digging technology that makes it a lot cheaper, a lot safer, and a lot quicker to dig massive, essentially subway tunnels. And then these vehicles are on, he calls them skates, that are propelled through this Hyperloop at speeds of up to 150 miles per hour. So think of what that could do to, you know, the commute between O'Hare and downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, you're like me, buddy. You're in aviation.
Oh,
you're
gosh.
A technology
I'd love
geek.
To
I'm not an underground
I'd love
guy.
To see you two do it. You two should go do it.
Oh, I'm actually...
You would?
I've been on the phone for the last 2 hours trying to see
I'll
if
go.
They'll let me in.
You'll
I'll
go?
Go. I'll go with it. I'll do the show from there. Mm-hmm. And my portion of the show from there, and I'll go with you and do that.
Oh, you're very
well,
brave.
We're going to take
the
CLTV.
The tube is only a mile long, so it would be about, 40 seconds of the... That's what you'd hear on the radio.
There they go. Are you guys there? Everybody
hopefully,
okay?
Hopefully it's like the Eagle at Great America where they have cameras in place. snapping your photo is your shot
I'd pay
out
to
of
see
the,
that.
The cannon.
Ben, remind us here, because we've known a mayor or two in the history of Chicago to sort of saddle taxpayers with some grand project, but this one was going to be paid for by Elon Musk's own company. Isn't that right? And then he would collect fees over a period of time, or is there taxpayer involvement?
No, so the mayor, so this is a project that's being coordinated but through the Chicago Infrastructure Trust Fund, and the mayor has said, no, this is Elon Musk's company that's paying for it, so we'll have the risk and we'll have the potential reward, yes, through fares. But what the city has to give up is the rights of way for that entire distance underground between O'Hare and
the
downtown.
The underground
as well
rights.
As potentially the liability.
Yeah.
You know, if things go wrong.
Well, they also have to build vertical tunnels that mat like escape hatches essentially along the way here so that people can get out. And that's one of the problems that they have here is where are they going to do that? You know, there's have to be some things before you get into Block 37 and then
But it's interesting, even these fanciful projects that really kind of help us visualize, you know, this Jetsons-like future quickly run into opposition. So out in Hawthorne, California, for example, where they've built this test track from Boring's facility in Hawthorne out a mile or two to a house that I assume they own.
By the way, this is how it's going to work out, and it's going to end up ending at Burke's house before
it's all going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
And then my guys will drive you to the airport from there.
Right, but some neighbors out there have you know gone to the.
Are there cameras going with our guys tomorrow with our aldermen?
So that's what we just found out you know a couple of hours ago that they're going. We've been asking the Boring Company, which is not particularly media friendly.
Starts with their name.
To say, you know, we'd like to go with them. It's unclear. I think some national, there will be some camera coverage of it because this is huge. We're trying to figure out how much they love
it. Now those guys know how to actually use a smartphone, though, because they don't have them. They only have flip phones because they are actually aldermen and realize a flip phone is very much harder to trace.
In federal situations.
I was going to ask an alderman to shoot a little video for me, but that's
not
going to
work.
Get him a head can. O'Shea can wear like a head can.
Yeah, how about
like a GoPro?
I've always said we should have an alder cam, which is
a
camera on the top of all aldermen, and they wear it 24/7, so we see what they are and who's handing them money.
Kind of like the way the cops have their cams.
Exactly. A body cam. An alder cam. All right. Thank you, Ben. More on this tomorrow. I cannot wait to
what
hear about
wrong?
This. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. We've got Judy Pilak with the WGN News coming your way in 2 little minutes. Concho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, you know, a couple things happened. I don't know if you people have been watching the news, because God knows I haven't been.
It's been a lot of sports to get through.
Yeah.
A lot of celebrating.
A lot of things that we got to worry ourselves about. But in what was kind of a surprise ruling late last week, a Texas judge throughout the...
Did you mean the highly respected judge in Texas, according to the president's tweet? Did you miss that part?
Only if they go along with the president. Are they highly, highly respected?
The big, big victory, quote unquote.
Right. By overturning the Affordable Care Act. Obamacare. All right. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are jumping up and down about that. Finally, that Obama got what he deserved. Only problem with that is that's people's health insurance. Seriously, that's people's health insurance. And there are people who signed up for it. Not enough. That was kind of the issue. And then Republicans are like, well, we don't, you know, I've never understood the Republican position on this, which is because Republicans were the ones originally all for a nationalized health insurance because the insurance companies, it's become clearer now than ever that there are pro-business forces in Washington that would like to keep profits as high as possible and government out of their business as much as possible. And they say that's going to be good because that will create jobs. Now, some of those jobs will be good. Some of those will not be so good. But it depends on what, however you want to look at it, there's that's one philosophy. Another philosophy is that we would like to sort of create a balance where businesses can be profitable and be should be profitable and should employ people, but also be there should be some rules for them to protect the interests of their employees and their customers. Right? That's mm-hmm. where you run into a problem. A lot of businesses go, just take all the handcuffs off and we'll police ourselves.
Just like the banks did.
Yes. Which is kind of laughable. I mean, this doesn't really work. Because every once in a while, you get a guy who wants to do a bad thing. Maybe open a for-profit college and take people of all of their money and give them worthless degrees, things like that. There might be business people who want to do things like that,
mm-hmm.
right?
That could happen. You've seen it.
But there has to be some guardrails. And the Affordable Care Act was originally conceived, the original idea of health care, nationalized health care, actually came out of the mid-1970s from Republicans who were doing it at the behest of hospitals who were like, we're taking so many public aid cases and we don't get paid on them and we're losing money and we need help. And there were these little hospitals, little neighborhood hospitals.
Absolutely.
You remember that.
Right here in Chicago. Right? Happens.
And then they started becoming these mega hospitals. The mega hospitals, oh, we'll take some of them, we won't take all of them. We'll do this, we'll do that. Because the question was, if you present near death at a hospital, and you don't have insurance, should a hospital save your life? That's an essential question. And that's the essential question of how we got to this argument of health insurance and whether the government should be involved in it or not involved in it. It's really as simple and as complicated as all that. So let me just ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just sort of roll backwards here and let me ask you this.
Yep.
The Affordable Care Act, we all agree, Obamacare. Even Obama says Obamacare isn't that, you know, had some problems.
Well, you heard Bill Clinton on it, too. He was fairly...
Yeah. I don't. You know what? He is
craziest
on
thing I've ever seen.
Bill Clinton's on my list. He is on my list. I don't need to hear from him. I don't need to hear from Donald Trump. I would like the two of them to get an island together, a reality show or something with Hillary. They're on my list. I want to take people who are really trying to do the right thing here and come up with solutions.
Great. I like that.
So now the Affordable Care Act has been thrown out. What does that mean for us? Dave Castillo is with us, and he's from Dave Surance in Naperville. And Dave, I tried to best lay out what the problem is. Now that this thing has been thrown out, the two things that everybody is worrying about is if you have ACA, if you're part of those insurance pools, are you going to be covered next year? And two, are pre-existing conditions going to be covered?
Well, thank you, Ro and Anna. I have to say those are two very important questions to answer right away for a lot of people.
That's why I asked them.
Yep.
That's exactly
the answer.
Yes.
The answer is everyone's fine for 2019. My prediction is that this will probably make it to the Supreme Court in 2020, and we decided then because it's got to go to appeals court in between there. So.
So everything remains intact as it is while it winds its way through the appeals process?
Yes, they're in the process of getting a stay, which we think they'll get. So everything should be fine for 2020. So all the work that I did getting people enrolled, you know, in the last month and a half is not going up in smoke. It's all going to be good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you go to healthcare.gov, they have a red banner across their main page that says, ruling does not affect 2019 plans and coverages.
Okay, so if you were covered last year, under whatever it was through healthcare.gov, through the ACA, you do have to re-enroll, right?
Not if you're making any changes or unless your plan is ending. And I really don't know of one plan that was ending. So most people, I would say no.
Okay. So if your plan ending, meaning that plan is no longer going to be made available, so you have to switch to another plan. Okay.
Yeah.
And those people would know that.
Yes, they would. They would have known in October.
Okay. So the debate in Washington is about this, and this is what a lot of it comes down to. It's about pre-existing conditions. Insurance companies don't want to necessarily insure pre-existing conditions because it's very, very, very expensive. And if they do, if they're forced to insure pre-existing conditions, they'll never say this out the way I'm saying it. But if they do, they want federal money, or they want some sort of an insurance on their insurance at a very reasonable rate, so they don't lose their keisters. I get it. It's a business. That's what they want to do. They're acting in their best interests. But as Americans who may have, you know, I don't know of many people over the age of 50 who don't have a pre-existing condition of some sort, right?
Right.
That you know, there's a lot of people very concerned about what they're going to be able to do to move forward if you can't get covered for things you already have, if you've had cancer or heart disease or any of those things.
Yeah, unless something changes legislatively next year to change what we're talking about today, which could happen, right? Who knows what the Congress will do. But I don't anticipate that being any issue for 2019 at all. And so I think everyone will be fine.
Okay. So, but moving forward, are you concerned about that?
I am. What's kind of underneath this iceberg of Obamacare are other things like age 26 coverage, the requirement that the Affordable Care Act did away with limits. There's no more limit. Everything is unlimited, right? So there's a lot more to it than just...
When you say unlimited, what's unlimited?
The amount of money that the insurance company can spend for somebody.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, so prior to Obamacare, an insurance company, you would buy a policy. Maybe it had $1 million limit.
Lifetime
cap. $1 million, $5 million, yeah. So under Obamacare, they're unlimited. So that's a big deal. Age 26 coverage for... for their kids and so forth, children.
This Texas judge basically was saying that this individual mandate portion of the law is unconstitutional, therefore the entire law must fail. And you look at it and you think you need the individual mandate, meaning everyone has to buy insurance. You have to have insurance. You need a requirement because you need healthy people in the system as well as people with pre-existing conditions.
Right.
I think where it started to receive a lot of pushback from those people is that healthy people were going to be penalized 2.5% of their yearly income and beyond. It was expected to rise if they didn't purchase it. So you really were incentivized to have to absolutely do it. Do you see the Supreme Court is that going to change? Because that's the issue here that has to actually be overturned.
Well, that's the argument that this Texas judge is making, and in the process of making an argument, he's using the arguments that were used by the dissenting judges in the last Supreme Court case as his argument for getting rid of it. Kind of a little bit of jujitsu there.
And also the language of the state's attorneys general who brought this case in front of him.
Right.
The Republican state's attorneys general who want to take down Obamacare.
But I don't think the Chief Justice, who was the deciding vote, really is all that interested in creating severability where they can, you know, take the whole law because one part's no good. So, in my opinion, I think it will still be here unless there's some legislative changes. And so they may go to the Supreme Court and they may strike down provisions of it. I don't believe they're going to have the severability of it will actually fly, in my opinion.
One of the arguments that's being used here, too, is one that has been a trope for years and years and years and years on the Internet, before the Internet, in chat rooms, and before the chat rooms in salons of people who are arguing about the constitutionality of a federal tax. There are a whole group of people out there who believe that the IRS is illegal and that federal taxation is illegal. Taxes are left up constitutionally just to the states, not to the federal government. It's not actually a taxing body. And some of these guys who have brought this case have had the I'm going to use the term balls because it's the holiday season, to bring that, to use that as an argument here, which would, if successful, destroy the federal government of the United States of America. So that would really be a problem. And I don't understand. There has been such emotion wrangling over the ACA and calling it Obamacare, and even Barack Obama called it Obamacare for a while, mm-hmm. and trying to create a personality around a piece of legislation that makes it untenable to 35% of the nation to get it overturned. And really all they're trying to get overturned here is people's responsibility for having to these insurance companies responsible for having to pay for people. And that, I think, is just, it doesn't make any sense to me. And
no, it really doesn't. And I can tell you that, you know, actuaries are the ones that, you know, will calculate that, whether they're asking health questions, not asking health questions, guaranteed issue. You know, the prices can be determined, right? So it's not a question, well, we can't do it because someone has X, Y, or Z. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's, what's the cost going to be if you do have X, Y, or Z? And the question was, if you had, because any insurance company would insure you for previous existing conditions,
sure,
at a really hefty price, and most people can't pay it, you know, and that becomes the issue. Or then the question, I think the question that's going to be asked politically here, mm-hmm. in 2020 about this, as we debate this all over again now 12 years on, is going to be, Is it okay to die if you don't have enough money to live? And I think that's really going to be the question. It was a question in 2008. It's going to be the question, I think, again in 2020. All right, Dave, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
sir. Dave Castillo.
All right.
Dave Shurance.
I would just advise anybody who has any questions about it, they can certainly go to my website, daveshurance.com.
DaveSurance. Dave Shurance.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Dave.
You bet.
Right,
bye-bye.
Dave Shurance. All right. I'm sure that people make fun of him for that. I got a feeling.
But I bet it's very memorable.
It is.
You remember it.
Do you think his family calls him Dave Shurance? I think they do.
There are a few jokes, I'm sure, Dave hears.
All right.
He can handle it.
Let's now check in with Judy and find out what her family calls her.
They call me Judy.
Mm-hmm.
A record for heart transplants thanks to the opioid crisis.
Coming up, Judy Palak is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Stay tuned for that. Coming up at the 4 o'clock hour, Tom Skilling and Ed Obradovich will be here. Not together, separately.
Nice. Got a lot of questions for both of them.
Skilling did a nice job getting the weather right for
he
the weekend.
Did. Oh, perfect game day weather.
Yeah, it was hard. As he was moving the sun. Did you see him out there? Trying to push the sun a little higher in the sky? It was something.
Nice sun. We had great sun on Sunday.
You know, it's always this time of year, it's really hard to play in Soldier Field in the first couple hours of a noon game,
mm-hmm.
if you are going from the north to the south,
because
mm-hmm. guys can't find that ball up in that sun. It's a good home field advantage for the Bears to know that going in. So
might have helped.
Yeah. We also, in the 4 o'clock hour, have a chance for you to rip us off for tickets to see the Blackhawks take on the Predators tomorrow night, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and listen for your chance to win tickets all regular season long. How about that? All right, so that's coming your way as well. On the 4, that's just your 4 o'clock hour. I didn't even mention your 5 o'clock hour. A.B. Stoddard is going to be here.
Nice.
A.B. wrote an article today that you can read at realclearpolitics.com.
Mm-hmm.
That is unbelievable. She solves the problem of 2020, at least for Democrats. And she's not even a Democrat. But she gave them a roadmap. If they want to fix this for themselves, she has come up with the perfect solution for Democrats. And as she mentioned earlier today to me in advance of this interview, mm-hmm. in my pre-interview, she said, they're not going to take my advice. So we'll find out what that's all about. All right. Let me just tell you this. It's 4 o'clock. Tom Skilling joins us, being brought to us by Permaseal Basement Systems.
happy Monday, everybody.
Thank you, Tom.
You too, Tom. Thank you for the great Bears weather yesterday.
Oh, you are more than welcome.
Sitting out there at Soldier Field, and it was actually
gorgeous.
A little warm at
moments,
if you're in the sun. Can you believe that? If you're sitting in the sun, it really did.
I know.
I wore my seven layers because I never trust it. When you're sitting there in your seat, you always feel colder, right?
So right.
You dress for the occasion, and I did.
You do. And it was close to 50, and we could be back there by Wednesday again.
How about
even
that?
Even tomorrow, not far from that. Yeah, isn't that nice? So
when's the bottom fall out, Tom?
Well, there's a storm spinning up later in the week that will bring a lobe of colder air in, but everything's very progressive. So it looks like we segue back into milder air again. And if you look out 2 weeks, every one of the next 2 weeks, every day, is to average above average.
Oh,
now,
wow.
You know, you can get an above average day and still feel cooler than we did today. But, yeah, there no massive, long-lasting Arctic outbreaks yet in sight. They may be there, but they're not showing up yet, and certainly not in the near term. I'll tell you one thing, though. It's going to get very, very windy on Friday because there'll be a big storm spinning up, and we might get some a wintry mix Thursday afternoon, even a period of snow Thursday night that could end as some flurries. But the winds will howl on Friday, and that will add to the chill. But it's only a temporary incursion of cool air, so... We're living right, Ro. You've done something right.
I don't know what
Anna.
I don't think
it's all the complaining.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think that's even remotely possible that I've done something right, but
well,
I don't think that's, but okay, I'll take it, I suppose.
Well, maybe the powers that be took the eye off the ball and didn't realize you hadn't done everything right.
I think that is the most likely thing is that yes. They're not going to pay attention to me for the moment.
But Christmas Eve is 1 week away.
And
so as you, I know it is something.
I
think that, right?
I know.
But as you look ahead, then you're saying that you're not seeing anything too scary.
Well, you know, there are a couple of shots of a little snow, one late in the weekend. And there's even one that a couple of our models are on to Christmas Day. So we'll watch those two. If they don't do anything, then, you know, that there goes our white Christmas. But
I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
The whole thing about the white Christmas. First of all, I know that it's very popular in the South.
Yeah.
But I gather
you're not. We're building into a white Christmas person.
I don't understand
the fascination
that the Christmas must be white. I mean, it's sort of like. I love the idea of like watching a movie where everybody's running around and frolicking in the snow. Okay.
Well, it's all Bing Crosby's fault. You know, if he hadn't sang about it, we wouldn't all be here in our, Courier and Ives frame of mind wanting a white Christmas,
But we don't need it. It's bad for the roads. You know, because there's a lot of travel on Christmas, right?
There
you
got
to go
right.
to your, you go to, some other relative's house for dinner.
Yeah.
You know, most people are traveling over those couple of days as they're moving around. And, do you need all? No, you don't need that.
No.
We're not going by horse-drawn sleigh. This is not Christmas in Connecticut.
That's true.
You know, who are we kidding around here?
And this is a high-tech era. You mean to tell me that Santa Claus hasn't developed some sort of means to get around, even if he doesn't have that stupid sleigh working right?
Unless he gets to Florida.
That's right.
Maybe. Half the people in Florida look like Santa Claus, so I'm never sure.
What's he do down there? That's right.
Yeah.
He figures it out.
He's living down there is what he's doing in the off-season.
It was very strange. I worked a year in Jacksonville, Florida, and it was very and that wasn't exactly like South Florida, temperature-wise, but it was very strange around Christmas to see Christmas trees lit up and in a green environment.
It is. Or palm trees with Christmas lights on them.
Palm trees. Yeah. Doesn't do it,
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I've spent a couple Christmases in Florida, and it's weird. It's totally weird. I mean, from being from the north and all that, that's
right.
You get that. But it's really interesting because since Florida is a state that is inhabited by the majority of people not from Florida.
Right.
Especially in the part of Florida that I was in, it was all people from Chicago, Canada, and the Midwest, the Great Lakes area. The West Coast of Florida is just all that. East Coast of Florida is a lot of Eastern Seaboard people.
Yeah.
But the West Coast is a lot of people from up here.
That's true.
And everybody's complaining about it. I go, well, then what are we all doing here? If we're complaining about it, we should go back up there. And they're like, nah, I don't want to do that either.
The thing I always got a kick out of in Jacksonville is if you predicted like a sub-freezing temperature, the phone would go off the hooks. People worried, saying, gosh, I haven't put antifreeze in my car. Is my radiator block going to break tonight and stuff like that? And you used to think, get over it. This is nothing.
Right.
So
stop your whining.
Right.
Wait, yeah. I don't want anybody saying that to me, though, because I made a living off of this.
Exactly. Stop your whining.
What?
I'm not allowed to stop my whining. My accountant said I can't stop the whining.
No.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, not for a couple more years.
Yeah, right? That's what he said, at least, yeah.
Yeah.
Because then you had a few setbacks, so right. you might want to just keep working until you're about 90.
Haven't we all?
Yeah. You work that out and go, wait, I got to do what?
I know.
Yeah.
Just keep the whining up. That's it.
That's all I'm going to do.
But, you know, Ro, nobody whines the way you do. I love the way you whine.
Thank
you.
So it is endearing.
That's what it's called.
It's like endearing whining.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
I'm the victim of most of my own whining. Hey, all right. So as we look forward, it's interesting. Now, we've talked about this over the last couple of months. You look at these forward-looking
models.
And now we're already in December. So in terms of, as we describe it now, meteorological winter, we're already, you know, two-thirds of the way through the first month of it, essentially.
Yes.
You know, a little over halfway through the first
month. Well, you know what's interesting? We've got an El Nino developing in the equatorial Pacific, but it's interesting. It's got to develop, and that typically is a mild signal for us in the winter. Problem is, this El Nino hasn't the atmosphere hasn't responded to the warming of the ocean below it yet. And you've got to get the two to sync up. And they think maybe, that there's something going on in the equatorial area that is messing up this linkage that's got to take place. But it sure looks like, you know, the pattern is getting a little bit more like that. And all El Niños are not created alike. I mean, even though they tend to bias toward a milder than average temperature regime, that's not always the case.
For sure.
Yeah.
And because you can also, there's all kinds of things that go on here. Did you see last night, speaking of this, did anybody see 60 Minutes last night?
You know what? I taped it. I haven't had a chance.
You must watch it.
The ice thing?
And no, it's the ocean. It's the
plastic.
Plastic's in the ocean. Yeah.
Oh yes, brother.
Yeah. I need to go see that.
Some of the images were frightening.
Yeah, I bet they are.
So here's the deal. Mm-hmm. The guy who came up, there was like an 18-year-old, right, who came up with this idea for cleaning up the oceans by using these boats in a big long boom, essentially with like a netting underneath it that floats underneath it.
Yes,
and then he goes around and tries to capture all of this stuff from, as they've been called, these plastic islands, which are really not islands. You cannot see them when you're flying over them because the plastic is anywhere from a couple inches to a couple feet below the surface.
Yes,
but then when you go below it, they took the cameras below to show what's going on down there.
Sure.
And it's so disturbing. You got all these sea creatures, you know, dolphins and other things. Well, they're swimming around with the stuff all over them.
Yeah.
And it's like, and you're like, oh, now what do we do? And they went to Midway Island.
Mm-hmm.
Midway Island.
I know.
And they looked at what's going on. Midway Island has this really interesting ecosystem of really rare birds.
Yes.
That all live there. And when they die, this is the most amazing thing. They die, you know, they die on the beach and they decompose and sometimes are eaten by other birds or whatever. And the only thing that's left are bones and bottle caps that are from their innards.
Bottle caps.
That they've eaten.
I've read over the years about they do stomach content analyses, and they find plastic in that. They find whales that have eaten plastic bags, you know, like the ones we carry our groceries out in.
Well, they say the turtles think that they look like jellyfish, and they eat them regularly.
It's sad.
They get stuck in their throats.
But the scary thing is the pictures, that there's a guy who works on Midway Island whose job is to clean up the plastic that washes up on the beach and the other garbage.
Yes.
They find plastic crates, bowling balls, motorcycle and firemen's helmets.
I know.
So the question is, for this guy, the guy who came up with this 18-year-old who came up with this thing, it's not really working. He's, you know, he got a bunch of angel investors and other types that came in and wanted to help him with this.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology isn't quite there yet. They're able to grab stuff up. But then when they get it, they don't know what to do with it. They pulled it out of the ocean and now it's sitting in a warehouse somewhere.
Right. What do you do?
And China is no longer taking our plastic. China used to take our plastic, isn't taking it anymore.
Wow.
Now Malaysia, Indonesia, and Vietnam have been taking some of our plastic because they can recycle it. But the recycling of plastic is a really, really, really hard thing. And they also learned something else that we thought that we already kind of knew, which is in the United States, we're offshoring our plastic. We don't really have a robust plastic recycling program in the United States.
Well, another thing too, Ro, when it decomposes, it releases greenhouse gas. So the whole process of decomposition is another source of greenhouse gas from these plastics. So, you know, there are just so many fronts on which this is not good.
So we do need to, I mean, and the thing is, we can sit around and go, that's, you know, you're a bunch of whiners, who cares, think of my day, I ate plastic and I liked it.
Right.
You know, we could do that, but it does require a solution, probably a big business solution and another economic overlay on that,
yes,
to encourage companies to find solutions to this, because it's kind of critical mass now. I mean, we're at it. You see it. If we just let it go for another generation, it's going to get exponentially worse.
Well, have you seen some of these pictures where they're pulling plastic out of the oceans? Like, they, I know down in the Dominican Republic, they did some cleaning of their beaches, and they have to from a tourist standpoint because nobody wants to watch this stuff coming in.
They were down in Central America, and they showed these rivers in Central America that are just clogged with just people just throw their trash into the river, and then it goes out, and that's how it's getting into the ocean.
Yeah.
More than any other way. Is, as one of the scientists said, listen, every time you throw a bottle into a waterway, it'll work its way into the ocean eventually.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of, you know, it's like the message in a bottle concept. It's really, it's fascinating, and I think that instead of being defensive about it or screaming about politics about this, I think it's time for politicians to turn around and say, listen, here's a problem we have identified. We can actually do something about it. We can at least try to invest some money in universities and other places to come up with solutions for this, and see if you know, the business and the educator, you know, and the, you know, whatever you want to call it, the research community can come up with solutions,
sure,
that make sense for everybody. And there will be jobs in this. There will be an economy around this, because it really is a way of. It's not just sad and creepy. It looks really devastating to us and our children and our grandchildren.
It is. They did a picture essay in the Atlantic magazine, and I'm sure if you went online, you could find it. And they showed pictures from around the world of all this plastic garbage that piles up on these beaches. And it's like, here's the Taj Mahal in India, and they had these mountains of plastic nearby.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
Yeah. It is sad.
Yep. All right. Well, on that happy note, we're going to say goodbye. Thank you, Tom. Thanks for the nice weather.
But I think you're right, bro. There probably are, if somebody put their mind to it, there'd be a way to make some money and a lucrative business out of this, which would be one way to, you know, get this thing cleaned up.
I think it's at least it's worth a conversation.
It is.
People getting all crazy, like, you're nothing but a liberal jerk.
I know.
MAGA.
I know.
You know, there's something else to this. I think we have to start thinking about ways to.
It's not a political problem. It's a human problem.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and I know most people don't care if a porpoise has a Diet Coke bottle in his blowhole, but I do, and I think that if you saw it, you wouldn't necessarily think that that was the best way to run a railroad, because eventually you're going to impact the ecosystem to such a way that
it's
not going to be able to get. You know, people like eating now. They like eating. They like eating out. They like the fish. They like the food. They like all the stuff that comes from a place.
That's right.
All right.
I look at my little dogs and I think, how would I like a plastic bottle in them? You know, if they had eaten that or something like that. And
or it got stuck around their neck and they couldn't get it off.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, thank you. I can't get that out of my head now.
Happy Monday, guys.
Thanks very much. Now all of a sudden there's a bottle and Tom's dog.
Tom's little sweet dog. Now it has a face.
Little Maddie and Kelly with bottles on
them.
Oh, no.
All right, thank you, Tom.
All right, guys. See
ya. Thanks, Tom.
Took a turn. All right, let's find out from Judy what's happening at the bottom of the hour.
Strike averted in District 211.
They're the kings of the north.
Love it.
From the House of McCaskey. Our Chicago Bears. Mighty and stout they are.
They are, and winter is coming for LA. Winter is here, baby.
Winter is here.
It's here.
Ed Obradovich is joining us. OB, oh, this is so exciting. OB, I heard you say something really important yesterday, that this is a magical year, and regardless of any criticism some people might have about the offense, including myself, and maybe sometimes you, but this is a moment where this is a championship-caliber team, and you got to take advantage of it while the sun is shining.
Bro, you couldn't have said it. I'll tell you, this is it. You know, and the one thing that will back up exactly what you're saying is the 1985 Bears, arguably, through all the great pundits in football, said that arguably might be the best football team ever, okay? You know how many times they won the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I do.
Once. And you know they had, in 84 and 85, they had the youngest team in the National Football League.
Yeah, I know.
So that's my point is, and I've been trying to freak, it's 16 games. You better be ready to play. And and again, the season, it's, I mean, I sit there and scratch my head. How the hell did we win that game? But I'll tell you what, it's happening, and I don't think it's going to stop. I really don't.
Now, what did you see yesterday that indicated, there was one play for sure that indicated to me that this is a team of destiny, was when Khalil Mack back tackled Aaron Rodgers.
The back sack.
Yeah.
It was remarkable.
I mean, they're creating such a push off the line, and it is so intense. The way the offenses are reacting to this siege kind of thing that's coming at them, it's so bad that the Bears punched the L.A. Rams so hard on last Sunday night that they were still dead last night.
Still feeling
I
it.
Mean, how about that?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I think the back half of the season, you know, you've been waiting for the offense to come alive. Just come alive. Come on. Play the game the way you're supposed to. And because defensively we've been there. And that game that you're speaking of against the Rams, they had the best record in football, whatever had you, they came in here. And who came alive, and I think who finally grew up, was our offensive line. Because, again, yesterday, our offensive line, that was one of the keys to the victory. They did the job in the running game and blocking game as best they could. And that you can't take away from them. The defense has been there. We have some receivers now that can actually catch the football. Trubisky's getting like this yesterday. He came along and he played to what Nagy wanted him to play. He played the dink and dunk game, and I'll tell you what, he throws a 6-yard pass, it turns into 16, 17 yards. He throws a 4-yard pass, an 8-yard pass, and the guys break on it and they get the yardage. And it's working for us. It's working for us. Let's keep it going. And again, when I said yesterday, to me, guess what? We won the North Division. There's no sense. Super Bowl. Those are the words that you talk.
Wow.
Nothing else matters but the Super Bowl. You want to be the world champs. And the way things are going with this team, with the breaks offensively and especially defensively, dominating like they've been doing, it is unbelievable. We can get there. I think we really can.
Dominating!
I love it. Super
dominating!
Bowl. Super Bowl. You've been saying, OB, this is a magical season for several weeks, and boy, it certainly feels like it. It just, you look at what this team did with the Packers in week one and what they did now, everything seems to be coming together at just the right time, and you feel like there's still even more that they're going to do each game ahead. It just, it does feel magical.
Everything now is, you know, you've got two games to go. You got to go out to Frisco, and then we got to go up into Minnesota, okay? Now, San Francisco's obviously doesn't have the greatest record in the world, but they have a quarterback that was undrafted, and all of a sudden this team seems to be throwing a football over the lot. So I don't want us to go down there with two games remaining. You don't want to go into a funk. You don't want to take a team for granted. You go down there, and you know what you're supposed to do? Crush them and crush them. And then go up to Minnesota, and they need a beating, and let's give them a beating, and then let's take care of business.
Yeah.
you know, taking care of business, too. There's still some stuff to play for here because the way the Rams have gone and the Saints play tonight, there's still a possibility the Bears could get a first-round bye and maybe home field throughout the playoffs.
Oh.
Are things going that well for them?
Andy, let me tell you something. I couldn't. Whatever you want to say this year, I got one word for it. It's magical. I can't. You sit there and you watch things happen, and I turn to the great Dan Hampton. I look at him and say, did you just see what I saw? I mean, it's incredible. But guess what? It's all breaking our way. It's about time. We haven't been in the playoffs in 8 years. And guess what? We took that game against the Rams. That was so important. And that really showed me something that obviously our defense, they can meet the challenge. Because that team was high-flying on offense with Goff at their quarterback. I mean, high-flying. And they had a great defense, an unbelievable defensive line, and our offensive line stepped up to the plate and manhandled them. That was the key to that victory against the Rams. And guess what? I think we just keep going with it. Those guys just stay strong, stay focused. And I'm telling you, this I'm hopeful, very hopeful.
Look at that. I've never heard him this excited before.
This is
great. Not since 1985 have I heard him this excited.
I like the way that sounds.
All right, and I think this is the best team since 1985. I think that the team in 2006 wasn't this good, and I think the team in 2010 certainly wasn't this good. And
no, they never their defenses never matched this defense of 2018. I'll tell you what. We finally got some defensive backs and oh my God, the way that defensive line goes and the key to that defensive line again, I know everybody talks about Mac, you know, it's this, it's that, but what happens is the quarterback cannot step up like he does against other teams. Why? Because we have one monster in there and then half a monster in Goldman, but Hicks, they crush, they take that line back, and that quarterback can't step up.
Yeah.
They can't step up. And Matt comes off either the left or the right side. He takes a man, half a man out, dips his shoulder, comes up with his arm, and uses his leverage, takes the guy back, and bang, there's the quarterback. Why? Because the quarterback can't step up. He can't get out. That's what's been happening.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch. And, you know, as a town that prides itself on that smash mouth football and you know, a couple yards and a cloud of dust and that old style, it is just so much fun to watch a defense be strong and relevant. And you're hearing the NFL respond to this. The NFL, which has all been about, you know, the crazy theatrics of offenses and passers who are getting 10,000 yards a game and these kinds of things. And to see them now talk about, well, maybe defenses do win championships.
Yeah,
you know, like,
it's funny.
You see, a change in the way that announcers are talking mm-hmm. about this. And I got to tell you, what is very fun, and I think the announcers that have the most amount of network announcers, I should say, that have the most amount of influence right now, you know, it's obviously Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. Mm-hmm. And to hear them talk about this team with the kind of reverence that they're talking about it, because they were talking about the Bears as much last night as they were about the Rams.
Like, which game are we
right?
watching?
I mean, it was really interesting to watch. So, the Bears are there for real. Your thoughts on Matt Nagy here, though. Obviously, as the season was starting, you guys on Sundays after the game, you had your criticisms of him. Yeah, and what do you think he's adjusted to here? Take me through the arc of him.
Well, I think when he came in, he wants to be the nouveau riche coach of the decade, and he went into training camp and he went in with his style of how to run a training camp, which is nobody does anything. And then when you talk about that game up at Green Bay, there's one reason and one reason alone why we lost that game. We're winning, 21-23-0 at halftime?
Second half,
our guys couldn't even breathe. They were dying out there. And that's what happened for the next two or three games until they finally got in shape. That's the way I saw it. That's the way Dan Hampton saw it. And so what has evolved from there is, hey, listen, you think Nagy doesn't know he has a problem with Trubisky? really believe he doesn't know? Like, this guy's the most accurate passer in the National Football League, in which he's not. He's not even close to it. And I'll tell you what, he cuddles him, he takes care of him, and we play the dink and dunk slash trick offense. And that's what we do. And you know what? It's working.
Well, we have this kind of defense. It's going to be okay. I think we'll get by on it. But you would love to see, as you watch these amazing quarterbacks, these great young quarterbacks and the great old veterans who are, you know, Drew Brees and you know, to whatever degree. I think the Aaron Rodgers era, Aaron Rodgers needs another team around him right now than he has, and I don't know what they're going to go do, and, you know, they're going to have to find a coach for him. And you sort of seen a little bit with Tom Brady. He's becoming real again, and maybe even Roethlisberger to some degree. But you've got guys, you know, like Mahomes, who you're going to see play here next week on Sunday Night Football, which is, he's just the most amazing. He's the most amazing kid, I think, on the field right now.
I don't recall. I'm sure. There's been some great quarterbacks that have played some spectacular games, but boy, for a kid to come up and start out this season and never play a game until the second season, and my Lord, this kid he's unbelievable.
Yeah, he really is. I know, and he was your choice for the draft that year. I know. I don't want to talk about it anymore. All right, that's
very
it.
Very happy with this
there
team.
You go. Leave it right there, OB. We're going to the Super Bowl, man!
I heard him say it. I heard OB say it.
All right, thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
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 All right.
It was also cool to see the player propose to his wife.
Oh, yeah.
I was in the stands. I'm like, wait, Charles Leno? Charles Leno is on the field there, and he's proposing. What a cool moment.
And it was bare down to a knee.
That's really something.
I worked on that all day. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well done, Andy.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway.
As far as you know.
Cool.
All right. let's check in now with Judy, find out what's coming up at the top of the hour.
Mick Burglar gets in and out of the drive-thru window in Cary.
Yes, it's the Rokan Show. Yes, it is Anna DeBlantis.
Yes, it is. Yes, it's after 5 o'clock.
A.B. Stoddard's going to join us in a little bit, talk about things that are going on in the world. Then, in the 6 o'clock hour, Sam Amirante is here on the 40th anniversary of John Wayne Gacy's arrest. Sam Amirante was the attorney representing John Wayne Gacy at that moment. He wrote the most chilling book ever. He's going to take us back to a midnight meeting with John Wayne Gacy before John Wayne Gacy was arrested that Sam had. It is startling when you hear the details of this, and he will be here at 6 o'clock tonight. It's just, I know it's 40 years on from it, but man, to get inside the mind of a serial killer and to be sitting in a dark office on the northwest side of the city of Chicago across a desk in the middle of the night with a bottle of whiskey in between you is really one of the most cinematic yet chilling scenes you could imagine. And Sam tells it perfectly, and it really happened.
Gee.
So he'll be here about an hour from now to tell us this story. All right. Are we ready to go on with this most important task?
I think we are.
All right.
Let's go ahead.
I'm not sure I am completely ready for us to go, but I'm going to make us ready to go. And here we go. Like I said, here we go.
What you said.
The buttons are pressing. Here we go. Hold on, please. Hold on.
Here we really go.
Here we really go. We're going to have to get this thing fixed.
It's not working again?
It's not working again.
It's now time on the Rokan Show.
Super loud.
Let's go.
Oh, wow.
3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Okay. I'd like to.
Number 5.
Did you see Rudy Giuliani? Did you see him yesterday?
I'm not sure he's helping.
On the Stephanopoulos. I'm never sure that he's... when he gets on, you're like, oh my God, what's he going to do that someone's going to have to clean up next? But the thing is, I wonder if they send him out there, because Giuliani's not a dumb guy.
No.
And he's also not...
inexperienced.
An inexperienced guy. I mean, he's a guy that I supported for president in 2008. I don't know what I was thinking, but I did.
He's been around politics. He understands that game. He understands the criminal game in the Fed world.
Yes.
Prosecutors. He knows all of this.
Does. And yet, somehow, he goes out and he says things that then the rest of the lawyers around him have to go clean up. And I wonder if they sent him out to create a distraction.
Hmm.
Or to create some sort of a, I'll stand over here, I'll say crazy things.
Yeah, that's the best explanation I've heard yet.
And then you guys, you pack his bags so we can get a jet out of the country.
No one's looking. Go. Go.
Oh, man. Now, he says that Giuliani says that the payments that were made to Stormy Daniels and McDougal did not violate campaign finance laws because they were not made exclusively for the purposes of shielding him for political purposes.
These are not campaign.
But the corporate campaign, the corporate contribution from AMI would be clearly illegal.
No, it would not be. It's not a contribution. If it's intended for a purpose in addition to the campaign purpose, in the case of Rio Hunter, right, the payment of $1.1 million was intended to shut her up and it was intended to avoid embarrassment with his wife and with his children. Now, which is worse?
Yeah, but what
the
you
campaign
did,
problem with the wife and
but
the
what
children.
But what you did, that's that case. Let's talk about the president's case.
Same thing.
So John Edwards, he was talking about Rial Hunter with John Edwards.
Right, that case, which a lot of people look to.
Just fine. Which, I mean, it really is quite a moment where we are not arguing about the facts that they did this. No. We are, all right, no, we never did that like they
porn
did before.
Star,
now
you know,
they've
the
moved
whole thing.
On. Yeah, of course he did it, because it's embarrassing. He was having sex with a porn star. Look at his wife. She's hot. And I do like the woman who's playing Melania Trump now.
On SNL.
Yes, no, in real life, because I noticed that they've changed the actresses playing her.
Please. I just like how Giuliani said in this interview he was very concerned about his marriage and that was the sole reason. But to your point, in interviews just a year ago, he was saying, well, it was the last debate with Clinton and Cohen needed to make this go away.
Now, what's interesting, too, is that he said that the conversations about Trump Tower Moscow went all the way to November of 2016 when he was talking to Stephanopoulos. And you're like,
wait a minute.
Wait, what?
November?
Now, you see, now significant? That, when he says that, you're like, that's like setting them up for an actual crime. And my understanding is that they were talking about it all the way until November, which means that in the last weeks of the campaign, he was worried about being able to get a deal done with Moscow for a tower there in case he doesn't become president or if he does. That added a whole new element to the investigation. What's he doing? Then Giuliani sat down with Chris Wallace over at Fox.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, there are several unpaid parking tickets back in 1986, 87 that haven't been explained.
Seriously?
Seriously, unpaid parking tickets.
No.
It was a movie theater where he didn't pay the proper fee.
Here's a special counsel. Does he want to interview the president?
Yeah, good luck. Good luck. After what they did to Flynn, the way they trapped him into perjury, and no sentence for him, 14 days for Papadopoulos, I did better on traffic violations than they did with Papadopoulos.
So when you say good luck, you're saying no way, no interview.
They're a joke over my dead body, but, I could be dead.
That seems very protective.
Oh, God. This is what we're talking about. See, this is what we're doing. Even Fox News putting them on to answer these questions. I mean, this is where we are. Is there going to be a moment where people go, hey, what about that Pence? This is the time where you go in. And if this were a football game, you'd see Pence get up and put a helmet on and start throwing the ball a little bit.
You're like, wait, yeah, what's happening?
All right.
But Giuliani's not helping his own client.
No.
Does this help?
Mike, get loosened up, would you? Just get loosened up. Checking in at
number four.
James Comey was clearly teed off at Fox News after his hearing with lawmakers today. After calling out Republicans, quote, fear of Fox News, he very directly told Catherine Herridge of Fox that people who watch her network believe nonsense.
Director Comey, the FBI's reputation has taken a big hit over the last year. Do you share any of the responsibility for that?
No. The FBI's reputation has taken a big hit because the President of the United States, with his acolytes, has lied about it constantly. And in the face of those lies, a whole lot of good people who watch your network believe that nonsense. That's a tragedy. That will be undone eventually, but that damage has nothing to do with me.
Okay.
Whoa.
Okay. okay, that's, I'm not feeling better about America right now. And then what about Michael Flynn?
You didn't tell Sally Yates about this interview with Michael Flynn the FBI was conducting until the day of. Why did you wait until the day of to tell Sally Yates about that investigation the FBI is going to have interviewing him?
Because I knew that if anything came of the interview, if it advanced our investigation, the attack from the Trump administration would be that an Obama holdover had engineered it. And so I had to make the decision separate from her to leave them with their only opportunity to challenge it would be to burn down the entire FBI. To my shock and horror, they've tried to do just that in the face of silence from people in this building.
And he's at the Capitol. That's when he says this building, he meant the Capitol.
Right.
That speaking lawmakers are being silent while Trump is trying to dismantle the FBI because the FBI is investigating him and the people around him. Mm-hmm. Now, do we not want the FBI, based on Donald Trump just saying, hey, I did nothing wrong? And when he told us a year ago, no one ever had a meeting with anybody, and then it turned out everybody had a meeting with everybody. And they were sitting around having, discussing at the possibility of the Trump Organization building a building in Moscow and giving an apartment to Vladimir Putin to win over his support for that project. And that they had meetings with Russians that they said they never had, including his son having one. And then they came up with an excuse for what it was. It was clearly a lie. All of that. They said they never did any of that. He also said he didn't pay off the porn stars. Fine, whatever. I don't care about the porn stars. I really don't. But he said, when he says something, it's not necessarily true. So are we supposed to just have him stop and go, listen, everybody was doing exactly the right thing. Don't worry about it. And you and the FBI, you go sit in your corner and you go after Hillary. Don't come after me. And we're supposed to just, as the American people, we're supposed to accept that and go, oh, yeah, no, he's right. He's, you know, that man's right about that. What about Hillary's? What about her server? Well, fine, go after Hillary's server. I don't care. I'm like, listen, if it takes putting her in jail to put him in jail, I'm all for it.
She's on your list, too.
She's on my list. She's on my list.
List is getting longer.
Can we just talk to Judy now? Judy is not on my list. The only person not
I didn't
on
make
list.
The list?
No.
Yay.
You don't want to be on that list.
No. I do not want to be on that mm-hmm. list. Three current or former Chicago cops will have to wait a little bit longer for a verdict.
So, let me tell you this. Watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's Ro Concha with Anna DeVlantis. We're in the top 5-5. We've worked our way.
Number three.
Wow. Well, now it's really working.
Totally.
I just got near the thing and it went off.
Fix that problem.
Yeah. All right. An associate pastor at Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church, who caught heat for buying his wife a $200,000 Lamborghini, is now defending the move. Pastor John Gray, who leads his own megachurch in South Carolina, says in a 23-minute Facebook Live video that he bought the car using funds from other things.
What should concern people who are actually genuinely concerned is, did this man use any money from the church to do this? And the answer is no, absolutely not. For those who don't know, me and my wife have a show on the Oprah Winfrey Network. We're working on season 4 right now. Shh, don't tell anybody. That's 4 seasons, okay? And I'm not an actor on it. I'm a producer of it. Get that straight. Oh, by the way, I just signed my second book deal. Win From Within is out now. Go buy it.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Joel Osteen himself lives in a $10.5 million house, but it's just sort of, that's what they preach. It's part of the message. You deserve to be successful.
I like Pastor Commerce over here.
Pastor Commerce. I suppose he's right like if he's him. Not using church funds. But,
yeah, okay, as long as he isn't.
But the Oprah Winfrey Network, I didn't know it paid that much.
It doesn't. That's the only problem there. And book advances don't necessarily add up either, but we'll see.
All right.
We'll see. You know what? My guess is that maybe there might be a little looking into it. But, of course, if the FBI or the IRS looks into it, then they're just out to get him. All right.
All clear.
Checking in at
number two.
Well, Saturday Night Live took a shot at the Trump administration, which was noticed by Donald Trump himself, and he's asking for an investigation.
Yeah.
In a court investigation mm-hmm. into Saturday Night Live, because they did a little spoof called It's a Wonderful Trump.
Brett Kavanaugh, how's the Supreme Court?
Me on the Supreme Court with my temperament? Are you insane? No, they went with that nerd Merrick Garland. But on the plus side, when I tell people I like beer, they find it charming and not like I'm threatening violence. Yeah. Plus, I have so much more time now to hang out with PJ and Squee and Needle Nick.
Thank you, Brett.
All right, Merry Christmas, everybody. Let's do this! Woo!
It's great. So
it's a wonderful life kind of thing. If Donald Trump had not been president.
Yeah. It's funny.
All right, and checking in at
number one.
In what's being called an inspiring win by our beloved Chicago Bears over the dreaded, hated, feared Green Bay Packers, 24-17 at Soldier Field to clinch the NFC North, eliminating the Packers from playoff contention.
Yeah.
And even though the victory feels great, Coach Nagy said we are not done yet.
We're not done. Unfinished business, but it feels good. Man, it feels good. Offense, defense, special teams. That's how it goes, man. You got me? Hey, it feels good. So enjoy it. Enjoy this thing. What I just got done saying, we are not done. You got me? If you're done, just leave. I ain't done. Number 10, get in here.
Don't hurt him.
Love y'all, boys. Let's continue to put the work in because we're not done. We're just getting started. Let's go. Family on three. One, two, three.
No one's leaving.
Nope. Nope. Not till Brett Kavanaugh's heaving. That's the way I look at it.
This is exciting.
This is very. This is a great moment. I know. Who would I? I mean, I wouldn't have thought the playoffs were even a potential, let alone the playoffs, clinch a playoff spot, two games left in the season, and maybe be the they could be the top two teams in the NFC. Oh my God!
The top five at five.
Did Donald Trump know that Michael Cohen was pursuing the Trump Tower in Moscow into the summer of 2016?
According to the answer that he gave, it would have covered all the way up to November 2016. He said he had conversations with him about President Hyde's. They know.
Well, earlier they had said those conversations stopped in January 2016.
Until you actually sit down and answer the questions, and you go back and you look at the papers and you look at the trend, you're not going to know what happened.
He's not helping.
What did he just do? You just wonder over at the at Trump Legal HQ when they see Giuliani get on and do something. They're like, no,
he's still out there.
Oh no! Did we know that they were still talking about Trump Tower Moscow until November of 2016? Did we know that? AB Stoddard from Real Clear Politics. Did we know that?
Well, the thing is about Rudy is, I mean, he's kind of become like Trump, but we don't know what fact-checking we have to do after he gives an interview. He might have revealed something explosive. He might be making something up out of whole cloth. It's really hard to decipher at times.
Okay. Hey, this is not going well. All the reporting, and I want to get to what you published today, which is, I think, maybe a roadmap for Democrats, although they probably won't take your advice, but still it's advice nonetheless. Well given, and I think intended not just for the Democratic Party, but just intended to like maybe bring some sanity into all of this and maybe help everybody stay out of the extremist ditches that the parties both have found themselves in. But I would there's a lot of reporting that the president is under a lot of pressure and that he's not happy, doesn't like the things that are happening around him, and the people are starting to dodge away from him. And they're using as an example, those who are writing these stories are using as an example the fact that he was having trouble finding a new chief of staff, and that's why he went with Mick Mulvaney, who was already working for him. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was clear that no one was going to take this job. And Mick Mulvaney is very shrewd. And the fact that he insisted on the term acting in front of the title means that he wants a trapdoor. The fact that he insists on remaining budget director, which is a Senate-confirmed position, which means he could be dragged before Congress to testify about the Trump West Wing and what's going on as chief of staff, if he retains budget director position because he's Senate confirmed, I almost feel like he's doing this on purpose. So there's something, he really understands how chaotic it is. that he's, that everyone's heading into the worst part of the tunnel that Trump's been in yet of his presidency, that people, they can't fill any of these jobs, and the chief of staff basically means keeping Jared and Ivanka happy, letting him tweet and watch TV, and never telling him what he doesn't want to hear. And I just think Mick Mulvaney knows exactly what's going on. He didn't want this job. He's telling the press, like, oh, it's great. It's totally up for it. But basically, Trump was embarrassed about the fact that people were on TV saying no one will take the job. So he just called him up and said, you know, will you do this? And Mulvaney said, sure. But I think, I mean, I actually, I know that Mick Mulvaney was at one point, you know, would have thought this was a great job to have, but I don't think he does anymore in December of 2018. And I think that's why he insisted on the term acting.
But so do you don't think he will become the official chief of staff? You think this is more of an interim position?
Well, I mean, he has told them that he will not bail and that he's going to give them, you know, that it doesn't mean that he's out the door and he's going to, you know, help him, you know, help him out and everything. And he's definitely like on the team, but why did he insist on using the term acting? It's, mm-hmm. it's because he, when he springs, he wants to be able to say that he never intended to be on that, you know, to be there that long and he needs to be this family. And, you know, he's, it, there's no question. He's making it semi-conditional for a reason, and I think that's because of the turbulence that he knows is there. We know about, you know, maybe half of how crazy it is, right? And so I think Mulvaney, I think he's up to dealing with it, but I don't. I think he knows that people really burn out, and it's a meat grinder, and I just don't think that, I don't think he intends to stay for 2 months, but as I said, it's very clear that he's given himself an out. And why is he keeping the budget director job?
Mm-hmm. I think the other piece, question. The other piece that's, that is fascinating today is to watch James Comey up on Capitol Hill. Got called up to Congress today again to testify, and he went after he went after Republicans for sitting on their hands during all of this. This attempted public relations dismantling of the FBI and calling out the FBI for being a partisan hack organization that was just out to protect Hillary and all the sorts of things that some Republicans are, you know, the things that the president's tweeting and then things that Republicans are being quiet about. And some of them are actually jumping in with the president on for, you know, I'm assuming pure political reasons. And, you know, even though Comey is maybe not the best messenger of all of this, and you talk to people in the FBI, and they're like, well, I don't know if Comey was really the best ever. Everybody loves Mueller, but I don't think they really loved Comey and Strzok and Page and all the rest of them. You know, they it was, you know, dumb mistakes that they were making drunkenly and hubris and, you know, with lust in their eyes. And they weren't thinking about that any of this was going to actually have an impact. And they didn't obey the FBI rules, you know, of conduct. And so in doing that, it brings everything into question. And Comey's trying to get his arms around this whole thing and go, look, you're trying to take this, the, you know, this interpersonal issue and besmirch the entire FBI as they're investigating the guy as commander in chief for a good reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Comey is this really interesting, you know, syndrome, right? Because he is directly blamed by so many Democrats for helping Hillary lose the election and helping Donald Trump win. If you look at the, I mean, I've actually spoken to people who were candidates in 2016, and they saw their numbers in the final days after that letter was released tank. And the number of undecideds who didn't like Hillary or Trump stayed home, or they broke for Trump by a bigger margin. And so there he is. He broke protocol. He came out on the 5th of July of 2016 and said no one would, prosecutors would never bring this case. But it's not the job of the FBI director to go and say that if they're not referring something to the Justice Department. So then you have him, you know, this huge dramatic figure in kind of the beginning of the real Russia investigation turbulence in the Trump administration, the appointment of special counsel when he gets fired. And he's this, you know, he's become like this grassroots, you know, resistance activist, and he's out to shame Republicans for not sticking up for the rule of law. And as we've discussed here many times, I think Republicans need to stick up for the rule of law, and I'm in agreement with this. But at the same time, he's an awkward figure because he clearly Where was, like, this, you know, Gussie Comey? Why didn't he say to the president, you know, if he wanted to stay as FBI director so badly, why didn't he tell him in the Oval Office, I'm not here to be your personal attorney, and I'm not here to make things work out for Mike Flynn, and I'm going to, you know, stick by, you know, the rule of law and my constitutional duty and everything else. Instead, he sort of was sneaking around writing memos, and he's sort of an easy figure to disparage because he is very ambitious. And he's made himself, you know, very clear, writing a book. You know, he wants to be kind of on stage in this drama. So he's an awkward figure, but I don't know why Republicans continue to bring him up to Capitol Hill so that he can continue to stand on his soapbox and refuse to answer their questions and then come out to the hall and say, you know, shame on all the Republicans and not answer any questions about McCabe or Strzok or Page or any of the people who broke protocol along with him.
All right. I'd like to say that you may have saved the democracy today with what you've written, but I don't know if anybody's going to listen. You have given Democrats a roadmap not to embarrass themselves in 2020, at least to make it competitive. And for people who are longtime viewers or readers or listeners to A.B. Stoddard, you know that A.B. is not exactly a Democratic operative.
No.
It's not been the hallmark of your career. But I think you've decided that you thought, you know, you're going to throw something in here. And you suggested a Biden-Beto ticket for 2020 that is a coalescent sort of movement to bring the progressives and some of the Looney Tunes Democrats in with moderate mainstream Democrats and tilting over toward working class white folks throughout the nation who are like, oh, I believed in this guy, then I believed in that guy, now I believe in this guy, and now I don't know if I should believe in this guy because my factory isn't necessarily coming back, and you know, all those other kinds of things. And I think that that there's some genius to that.
Well, I appreciate that, and I also agree with you that I don't think anyone's going to listen because the response I've gotten is like, "Oh, two white dudes, forget it, AB." But I think that in the piece, I make the argument it's not the only shot for them to beat Trump, but I think it's by far the best shot, and that is that Biden is the only Democrat that Republicans will vote for, and otherwise they'll just stay home. So any Republican who is horrified by Trump and would never have voted for Hillary but didn't vote for Trump, is, you know, voted for Gary Johnson or Evan McMullen in 16 and is still, you know, woefully upset about what they've seen in the last couple of years and the direction the world is going. I know a lot of them, and they would vote for Biden. They're not going to vote for any other Democrat, so they would stay home. So Biden is the person that can transition, just like Pelosi is going to become Speaker again by knocking off a lot of resistance to her by saying this is not the time for on-the-job training. So can be the argument of Joe Biden, which is that we need to reset with the entire world, with our enemies, with our allies. Everything is out of whack. I can come in on day one with an experienced staff and transition to the next generation of Democrats. I can serve one term. I can train, you know, in this case, Beto O'Rourke, and get everyone through this chaotic, dysfunctional transition period post-Trump. And he can appeal in the meantime, not only to Republicans, but those exact Democrats you described, the people who wandered off from the Democratic Party towards Donald Trump, but who find Joe Biden a very credible person who is a devoted Catholic, roots in Pennsylvania, and has always been able to speak to these people and be accepted as an authentic messenger with them. And there is a piece in the Wall Street Journal this week saying blue collar voters are up for grabs. So it's Biden really is perfectly positioned for all the reasons I mentioned. Beto O'Rourke has a cult following. He has 800,000 donors. He almost turned Texas blue, and he can in 2020. That's 38 electoral votes. It would forever change the trajectory of the Democratic Party in terms of how you get to an electoral college victory. It will bring a cult following. It will bring new voters. It will bring lapsed voters. And that is you have to fight fire with fire. And I argue in the piece that Trump has a cult following. Wow. I think that, you know, look, many operatives made the case to me, Ro and Anna, that I'm crazy. You have to have that. The only time in 20 years the Democrats has won an electoral college victory twice was with Barack Obama. Otherwise, Gore and Hillary, they win the popular vote, they lose the electoral college, and that, you know, it's not going to work. That you have to, if you want to get pragmatically to the math, you have to nominate a black woman, or it may be Biden with a black woman, but you cannot go this route that I'm suggesting. And, you know, I understand that they're not going to take my advice, but I do think it's their very best shot.
Interesting.
ABL, I just want to say that your assignment after the first of the year is to fix the Republican Party.
Yeah. Can you work on that too, please?
Get right on that,
please.
Too. Thank you. We won't talk to you before Christmas, so Merry Christmas. Thank you
Merry
for everything
Christmas.
You've done for us this year. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Merry Christmas, guys. See you in the next year. I'm looking for a little more stability.
That's what you're wishing for, okay. Hoping for.
Aren't we all? Thank you, AB.
Thanks.
Bye. Good luck to all of us.
All right. Let us now check in with Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
No severance for the former president and CEO of CBS.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Go Bears.
Thank you.
Just still thinking about it. You've apparently let go and just have moved on.
I'll be back to going with Bears on Sunday.
Okay.
Until such time as that.
The whole week you're not going to think about the Bears, not once.
Well, I will think about it a lot. But this, I want to talk about something completely different here.
Okay.
Which is, today is the 40th anniversary of the arrest of John Wayne Gacy. Mm-hmm. And the man who was with John Wayne Gacy at that moment, 40 years ago, last night and today, is a guy named Sam Amirante. Sam Amirante was a judge, he's a lawyer, he's a Chicago, he's a prototypical Chicago lawyer story. He's a guy that that handled big cases and small cases and rose to the level of judge and has been in private practice, done this sort of thing. I mean, this is a true Chicago lawyer and has the most chilling story to tell. And he did tell it in a book called John Wayne Gacy Defending a Monster, because that's what Sam's job was with John Wayne Gacy as his criminal defense attorney. And we want to have him on. It's the most. Because, Sam, I want to go back to the night that John Wayne Gacy came to your office and you sat there and he described for you what was in his mind. And you write about that in that book in such a way I will never, so few things have ever stuck with me in my life. And that's a scene that will stick with me forever. Mm-hmm. So I want you to share this now. Here we are, the 40th anniversary. You know exactly where you were 40 years ago today.
Yeah, absolutely, Ro. How are you, Ro? Anna, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, that was probably the longest night of my life. I kid around and tell everybody I was 6'4" before that night. Now I'm 5'2", but it was long, and I aged many, many years that night. Never expected to hear what I heard. Never expected the result of what took place. And I was representing this guy in an investigation of a missing boy from Maine West High School, Robert Peast, and he kept giving me a story, a song and a dance, and was going on for a few days before he got arrested. And his story started to get a lot of cracks in it, and I just wanted him to tell me the truth. And he wound up talking to me all night long after I yelled and screamed in my Italian. You mentioned a Chicago lawyer in my Italian way, you know, pounding on a desk and yelling and screaming at him to tell me the truth. And putting a picture that was in the newspaper of Robbie Peast actually throwing it down in front of him and asked him what happened. John, this kid's a good kid. He's missing. He comes from a good family. Everything's pointing toward you. You were in the pharmacy, blah, blah, blah. And he lied to me again, and he told me that he never saw the kid. And then I started yelling and screaming at him, and he asked me if I had anything of an alcoholic nature to drink. And that day, one of my former investigators from the PD's office happened to give me a bottle of VO for Christmas.
Yeah, because it was right there.
And I had it in my car.
Like so many people right now, you tie this to this exact time of year. You know, I got about a week to go before Christmas. People are exchanging gifts.
Right.
Things are winding down.
You're giving people a bottle of this, you know.
Right.
And so, it totally is true.
It was a lot colder than it is today. It was a very cold, cold night, Chicago night. There was snow on the ground, snow and ice. And Leroy Stevens, who was another attorney who was representing Gacy on his business affairs at the time, and I were on this back and forth with the investigation. And Gacy called me and asked me if he could meet me at my office before this happened. And I said, John, look, if you want to tell me the same old garbage, you know, you could, I didn't, you didn't use the word garbage. I said, if you want to tell me the same old garbage, then I'll talk to you. I don't need to hear it again. You know, I'm busy. My son was in the hospital at the time. And he said, no, it's something different. And that's when he came in. He told me the same thing. That's when I got angry with him. And then he asked if I had anything to drink. I ran out to the car. I got the bottle of VO. I brought it back in, and the police officers were out in their car, two of his tails, and they were going to be out there a while, and I invited them into the foyer of our building, and asked them if they wanted a cup of coffee or something, and they went in there because they were following Gacy, or like his buddies at the time, and I went into my office with the bottle. I poured the glass. Remember those old plastic cups with the plastic bottom? You would insert the cup into it.
Yeah.
I poured the booze into Gacy's cup. He said, fill it up. And I filled it up. I took a little shot, and Leroy had a little shot. We toasted Christmas. He drank, gulped it down. He said, fill it up again. I filled it up again. He gulped it down. And he looked at the picture of Robbie Peace, and he said, this boy was not the kid in the pharmacy, but this boy's dead. My heart started pounding through my chest. I said, what do you mean? What do you mean this? I said, John, this is the young man that was in the pharmacy. Well, this boy's dead. He's in the Des Plaines River. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And then he looked at me, eyeball to eyeball, no more than maybe 5 feet from me, and said, I've been a judge, jury, and executioner of many, many people, and now I want to be my own judge, jury, and executioner. I'm going to tell you how it started. I'm going to tell you the whole story, and I don't want you to say a word. I want you to listen to me, and I want to handle this my own way. I said, what are you talking about? And Leroy and I are kind of looking at each other, looking at him, not knowing what was to come. And he said, it started in 1972. I was cruising around the Greyhound bus station, and now where the State of Illinois building is. Mm-hmm. He didn't tell me that, but it's where the State of Illinois
and Randolph,
and Randolph,
yeah.
Right, between Lake and Randolph. And he said, so I was cruising there, and I picked up this guy, and then from that point on, he went into the whole thing and described in detail, in very, very specific detail, every single murder in order from 1972 to 1978, to his last victim, Robbie Peast, and it was just a horribly long. I mean, I could tell you, you know, if you had a couple of hours rolling in, I could tell you the whole thing, but it just was, Leroy and I just sat there, and we just couldn't believe what we were hearing, and then he wanted to show us.
This went on for hours, right? This went on.
All night. It went on all night long. It was the horror story just coming out in front of us.
And you were writing you guys were writing it down while he was telling it, obviously, or how did that work?
Yeah, well, we wrote notes on it. You know, we were writing notes. Basically, we were just kind of staring at him, trying to figure what the heck is going on. Staring at him, looking at each other, smoking cigarettes, one cigarette after another one. And we couldn't believe it. And it was like, no, this couldn't be. This can't be, John. He offered to show us the crawl space, told us all about the rope trick that he had done, that he had developed, you know, with the handcuffs. He would put cuffs on himself, and then he'd get the cuffs off, and he would have these kids put the cuffs on them. Because they would say, oh, John, how you do that? That's cool. How do you do that? He said, here, you try it. He would put the cuffs on them, and they would try to get out of the handcuffs, and they go, come on, John, you know, how do you do this? He goes, well, I know the trick. You're dumb and stupid. And he'd show him a key. He'd have the key in his pocket, and he'd pull hold of the key and say, the reason I got out is because I had the key. You're dumb and stupid. You don't have the key. I got another trick I want to show you now. And he would take a rope and put it around their necks like a tourniquet with a hammer handle in it and twist it.
Okay.
And he would basically say they killed themselves because they were dumb and stupid and they couldn't get out of his rope trick. He called it the rope trick.
Wow.
And he told me one story after another after another, and I was just, I mean, you can imagine. That it was just, you know, I was a young lawyer. I was 30 years old.
I can't imagine.
I heard a lot of stories, but this was just, it was unbelievable. When I went home.
Sam, so what was your feeling, though? I just want to ask you real quick. The feeling that you got was that he wanted to be caught at that point, or that he knew he was about to be caught? Because he seemed like such a cautious, skilled manipulator that either he either felt that the walls were coming in and there was enough evidence, or that he just thought it was up. I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand that.
You know, I really didn't think about it that particular night. All I could think about was... it was phenomenal. I was 30 years old. You know, I had tried murder cases, and I dealt with all kind of people and stories as a public defender. This was my first case in private practice, and you know, I just opened my new office, and I really wasn't thinking in those terms. I was thinking, what do I do next? You know, what do I do? I can't disclose this to anybody. There's attorney-client privilege. He told me he's going to build a second story in his house because he ran out of room for the bodies, and he was going to start putting bodies in between the floors, the levels of his house. He ran out of room because that's why he was going to the Des Plaines River. So here I am in a quandary as a lawyer, an ethical quandary, thinking, well, do I report him? Because you have to report somebody who's going to commit a crime. A lawyer can't participate in committing a crime. He told me about the crawl space. He wanted us to go look at it, and I couldn't look at the crawl space because what your client tells you is attorney-client privilege, and conversations you cannot and should not disclose or divulge. But if he showed me the evidence of a crime, that is a different story. You're an officer of the court. You can't hide evidence. You can't obstruct justice. So all these ethical things are going through my head. And then when I left him that night, I felt like, I guess like a person feels when they get raped. I felt dirty. I felt horrible. I went to take a shower. I was like trying to wipe the sins of the world off of myself. It was just a horrible, horrible feeling. Later on, when I thought about it, to answer your question, I do really, truly believe, and I believe to this day, 40 years later, that he wanted to get caught. He truly was the real-life Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. When he was good, he was the best of good. When he was bad, he was the worst of evil. And I think that good part of him, and he had a very good part of him. He had a very good, you know, like people say, the mean clown and everything. He used to really try to make people feel good, make kids feel good. He'd have these parties and everything. He would try to make people laugh. He was compassionate. That was the good part of him. Then there was that horribly evil part. And
this is amazing,
I really, really believe
how both of those things both those things could live in somebody, and that's I think the scariest, you know, as a human who's walking on the planet Earth, that's the scariest thing about dealing with people, because you're never 100% sure of what you're dealing with when you're dealing with people, and obviously most things are not as, you know, purely evil and violent and insane as what John Wayne Gacy did, but they are but you know, you just never know. And Sam, before we let you go, and on this, now that you've had 40 years from that night where John Wayne Gacy sat in your office and told you those stories, and then obviously there was the subsequent trial, and he was convicted, and then he was eventually executed in Illinois for those crimes, and you stayed with him for part of that defense. As you look back on that moment, how would you say that, what part will you of yourself will you never get back?
It's funny to think about it. 30-year-old Chicago attorney, former public defender, is innocent. It's almost like I lost my innocence that night. It's like mentioned before, like a rape, like losing your virginity. I never fully could trust, like you just said, Ro, anybody. You never really know who anybody truly is. I tell people the scariest thing about John Gacy is that he was not a scary person at all. And because of that, I became very protective of my own children. Even now, I have a 12-year-old daughter, I have a 43-year-old son and a 40-year-old son who were little children when that started. And now I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I have a 25-year-old stepdaughter. And I've been very protective of all of them. Up to last night, talking to my little girl about that very thing, my 12-year-old, we were watching some of the Gacy stuff on TV. And I said, Sophia Bella, and I'm sorry, that's why Daddy's so protective of, you know, the things I do and I say, and I'm sorry for that, but there's people in the world like that you really have to watch for. Yeah. It's a sort of innocence, even though I had been in the Marine Corps before that, and it was just sort of an innocence that I lost, that I could never get back.
All right, Sam, thank you very much.
Thank you,
appreciate
Sam.
It. Thanks for telling the story again. And it's Sam's book's been out for a long time now, but
it's riveting.
If you are interested in this, you know, real crime story, and a lot of people are, because there's a bunch of anniversary specials, even CNN's running one. John Wayne Gacy, Defending a Monster, Sam Amirante, who was his first defense attorney in all of this, and spent that harrowing night hearing the confessions of John Wayne Gacy. Sam, thanks very much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sam.
Be safe. Have a good holiday.
You too.
Thank you.
It's a great time for our team. I'll go back to again. I want to completely thank the fans. Unbelievable. The city for their excitement and just getting our guys so amped up for this situation. I mean, how cool is this? You know, for everybody to be walking off the field and enjoying a great time with the city and with the fans and what they've done. What's up, Coach? Yeah, it's been awesome.
Who should maybe arguably be the NFL Coach of the Year, Matt Nagy, taking the Chicago Bears from worst to first. And I like the story today that I saw about how that's a surprise to everyone except for the Chicago Bears. Our Bears insider, Adam Hoge, is that true?
What, that he's Coach of the Year?
No, that it was no surprise to them, to the Bears, that they expected
this. Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, look, I think that the Bears... Mitch Trubisky, for example, was asked in his postgame press conference yesterday, when did you realize Matt Nagy was the right guy? And he thought about it for a second. He was like, really, to be honest, like the second we hired him, the second I talked to him. You know, this was a first impression type guy. Matt Nagy gave off a great first impression right away, and the guy started believing in him. So I don't think anybody in the building surprised. I think people like us are just sort of surprised maybe with the amount of success they've had.
They've had some... It's interesting because they've had some things not go their way. But last year, as you'll recall, even under John Fox, they were a couple of plays, bobbles, little things that went wrong away from having a much better season than they had. Right. And you could see that they were on the cusp of something, right? They weren't getting blown out. You know, it was a tight game. What's interesting about this season is they seem to be offensively more productive than they are now, and maybe that's because teams have adjusted to all the tape they've seen of Trubisky and the Bears offense and the trickification of the whole thing, and that's again everybody's kind of running those kinds of offenses now anyway. It just seems that the defense, though, is a thing that you can watch tape all day long on defenses, and it's almost impossible to game plan for them because unless you know, the only way to do it is to double and triple team guys.
Yeah, and look, part of the reason why I think Matt Nagy is a legitimate Coach of the Year candidate and probably should win is right now, if you look at the Bears' offense, it's not that they're necessarily this dangerous, explosive offense that you have to be worried every single moment, but they're incredibly hard to prepare for. And that's because of the coordinator. That's because of the guy running the show, Matt Nagy, who is just, he's dressing everything up. He's, you know, he on any given play, you have to be worried about some kind of trickeration or somebody in motion. He's making life easier for Mitch Trubisky by creating the right matchups and putting the defense in vulnerable positions so that Trubisky can make the right read and make the right throw. Now, he doesn't always do that, but I keep calling him the coordinator because that's what he is on offense, but Nagy is making life easy for Mitch, which that coaching staff last year did not do for him. In fact, I think they made things really hard for him at times. So that's one of the biggest reasons where this isn't necessarily an explosive offense, but it's hard to prepare for. And so when you have that defense on the other side of the ball, the Bears are a really hard team to beat right now.
Let's go back to the trickeration because, you know, I was guilty yesterday of fanboy tweeting with the fake punt. And it just kind of seemed it came at a weird time. But I liked your response to a lot of people on Twitter with the fact that you can't complain about it when it works, when it doesn't work, and be happy about it when it works. This is just his MO. This is what he does, right?
Yeah, look, I was one of the people saying that I thought he got too conservative in the second half at Lambeau Field back in week one, and that contributed to the loss. And Nagy even said last week that he learned some lessons from that second half and that collapse that they had. So yeah, I expected him to come out and be aggressive throughout the football game yesterday. Did I necessarily like running the fake punt instead of just putting the offense out there and trying to get it? No, I would have preferred you just gone for it with the offense. But that being said, I'm not going to criticize him being aggressive because that's who he is. And more times than not this year, it has paid off. It is a big reason why the Bears are 10-4. His mentality. And by the way, if it worked 100% of the time, then it wouldn't be controversial. Everyone would just do it all the time, and it wouldn't be trickeration. It would just be the norm. And so it's not always going to work. And so I appreciated Nagy sticking to his guns there, learning from what happened in week one. And he took the heat after the game. He said, look, that's one of those plays where if we lose the game, I get killed for it. And I totally understand it. But that's who I am. And this is what this team does.
Well, that is who he is. And that is very much the kind of thing that teams have to prepare themselves for or to always think about twice. I think he sort of learned his lesson a little earlier in the season because he did cost the Bears at least one victory by being, I think, a little too aggressive at times. And he says that since then he has been, you know, more thoughtful about you know, going about ball security and playing a little bit more conservatively. It is the NFL. This is not college. In college, you can get away with a lot of stuff you can't get away with here. And that's, you know, if he's got a championship team, you got to win on the lines. You got to win, you know, with the hard work. You got to have better players than the other guys have. And as I mentioned last week with the Chicago Blackhawks, at the end of the game, you have to have scored more points than they've scored, and that is an important. I'm trying to get that into the heads of the people over at the United Center, but it's a really important thing to play within yourself because now as the playoffs are starting, and I do. You have no idea how good this makes me feel.
Doesn't it feel great thinking about
playoffs? and that we're not going to see, you know, like I'm very, very, very happy too that it's almost as important to me that the Packers lost as that we made the playoffs. You know, it's like it was
that big. I mean, just being at the stadium too, it was like they just beat the Packers. Oh my gosh! And then they flashed on the Jumbotron, NFC division champs, and it was just like one celebration. People were hugging each other and kissing each other who didn't even know each other because it was such a magical moment as a Bears fan.
Yeah, I thought that was a storyline all week, kind of the symbolism of the opportunity, not just to clinch the division, but to beat Aaron Rodgers and make a statement over your rival that has dominated you for really since 1992 when Brett Favre became the starting quarterback. Geez,
why do you got to bring that up?
Because it all led to this game yesterday.
Do you realize of the 198 meetings?
This is terrible sad, I can feel it.
Out of the 198 meetings, you know the differential between...
You're saying it's about half-half. Yeah. 50-50 if you go back that far.
Packers have won two more games than the Bears.
But recent history. Because how many times have you gone recently, even 10 years or more, to a Bears-Packers game and really felt as if the Bears were just a far better team, or you felt as if they had much more than the Packers to give?
Well, and that's the thing about the history. The thing about this rivalry is the Bears used to dominated. They used to have a huge margin. It didn't used to be almost 500. The Packers are 40-15 now, including yesterday's loss for the Packers, since Favre became the starter back in 1992. So they took a series they were getting crushed in and actually now have the lead. And now I think the hope is that the Bears have this thing turned around and will, you know, be the team dominating this thing for the next decade.
The Bears have the lead in that overall?
The Bears had a huge lead. Now they don't. Now they're two games behind.
Games.
Yeah. Green Bay has two more wins than the Bears. But they went 40-15 over the last 26 years.
Yeah,
to
I know.
Just get back to 500.
I was there for all of those 26 years. I've been there for 50 of these years. I know.
You know.
I know what I know where this lines up. To me, there's something though. I hate to get ahead of myself here, but next season, I mean, the Bears are still going to be good. We're going to see who the Pack gets as their head coach. I don't think this guy's going to be the head coach that they've got now, but Philbin. But I think whoever it ends up being. And they come back, and let's assume that they make some improvements and they get healthy. You got the 200th meeting, right, will be the second game in that series, which will probably be in Green Bay, the way the NFL will do this. It'll probably be later in the season in Green Bay. It'll be the 200th meeting, and it will be for tying the series up. If you don't think that's the best rivalry in the history of American sports, you are out of your mind. When you stop and you think about that. And it'll be the 100th season for the Bears, and this year is the 100th season for the Packers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Bears are going to be blowing that thing out next year. I mean, they're going to be going all in. Could you imagine if they're just to, you know, pile on, get everybody a little bit more excited? Mm-hmm. What if they're celebrating a Super Bowl during their 100th season?
Well,
oh boy.
Yeah. I mean, or they're a Super Bowl caliber team in their 100th season. I mean, that's an important, that I think is, you know, what we're all kind of hoping for here. I have not succumbed to that level of Kool-Aid yet. I'm still in.
Can I help you?
I'm ready to drink it. I totally am.
Yeah, you can help me. I would like. All right, Adam Hoge, Bears Insider, tell me why I should be hopeful that the Bears are going to get to, let alone win the Super Bowl.
If Mitch plays like he did yesterday, I watch every team in the league a lot. I know what the competition is in the NFC.
You need no proviso on that. We understand you are the Bears and NFL Insider. Go ahead.
Know your stuff.
Yes.
I do not know that there's a team that can beat the Bears in the playoffs if Mitch plays as well as he did yesterday with that defense that the Bears have. Okay, now that's a big if. He posted a 120 passer rating yesterday. He played really well.
When you say
he plays like that,
well, okay. Now let's just talk a little bit about what that actually means. He yesterday, I noticed a couple times, and you got to give it to Belviv DeVoe here, that Bellamy kid, who last year I was calling for his arrest.
You were,
yes.
You were not happy with him.
I thought it was fraud against the United States of America or whatever the charges are, because he could not catch a ball. He went up for balls. He was able to, you know, get his hands around. Guy, there were a lot of receivers who got Mitch out of trouble by stopping and turning around at the exact right moment, which was great. But you still don't get the sense from Mitchell Trubisky that he's going to lead an offense against, you know, top tier defenses. And let's face it, there's still some left here. Obviously, we showed what we could do against LA. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Huge.
Right? But you're not worried about New Orleans? You're not worried about maybe I don't know who is it. We'll see against Minnesota. It's going to be Minnesota or Seattle, right?
Yeah.
Right, but well, they're all going to be hard. I mean, I'm not saying that the Bears are just going to, you know, have a cakewalk to the Super Bowl, but I think something significant has happened here in the last 5-6 quarters. Okay, going back to the Rams game, after Mitch threw that third interception against the Rams, I think Matt Nagy kind of made a decision. All right, enough of this trying to develop him into a Hall of Famer right now. We have a team that can do some serious damage this year as long as the quarterback's not killing us. So you rein him back a little bit, and I thought that's what you saw yesterday. There was not a high level of a difficulty to the throws that Mitch had yesterday. Most of it was relatively safe, but still effective. And so, look, you saw Nick Foles win a Super Bowl last year with a good Eagles defense.
You say Nick Foles barely beat the Rams last night, but Jazan beat the Rams.
And he played well again. And so that can be the formula when you have a defense this good, and that's what I'm saying. I think this whole idea of developing Mitch, it still matters, but it's not the focus point anymore for 2018. Him not killing the team is now the focus point. Now, I don't want to even use the word game manager, but that's kind of the situation, because as long as he doesn't kill you, doesn't turn the ball over, he's good enough to score 2-3 touchdowns per game, and that's going to be enough to win games in the playoffs here.
And he's, I'll tell you something else I love about him, though. This, I'm going to say something nice about Mitch Trubisky, because I know
you haven't even mentioned Mahomes yet, Patrick Mahomes yet.
I'm getting there.
Not once.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Okay,
I know,
it's been
21 minutes, and I haven't mentioned Patrick Mahomes. I can't believe it. But there is something about him that I really do appreciate. When he has a way of getting out of trouble, he does have this scramble ability that is really, really, really special. Mm-hmm. And the great ones have it. You even see Brady do it, right? I mean, they just find a way to get out into the open. And then that screws up a defense, because then they're like, we got everybody perfectly covered.
Right. And then this guy
converted on 3rd and 12. Right? So it's very frustrating to defenses. So I do give him a ton of credit for that. He's not an accurate passer, mm-hmm. at least in, you know, over 10 yards or 15 yards. But he is. But he did throw a couple bullets yesterday, and you know, to guys, we threw it where only they could catch it. He's coming along. Game manager, I'll take. All right, fine. You have me excited about getting through the first round. We'll just have to see who we catch here. And you know, the next 2 weeks are going to be very exciting. Would you play Mitchell Trubisky both games, Adam Hoge? Yes or no?
Yes, if they're playing for a first round bye, absolutely.
All right. If they're not playing for a first round bye, would you play him? A yes or no? I just did a yes or no.
Okay, I'm going to say no then. If
all right, and let me ask you this. Do you think Eddie Jackson will be back?
For the playoffs, yes.
All right. That's all I needed. Thank you, Adam Hogue.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Andy Mazur. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, America, for giving us the Chicago Bears. All right. Thank you, Don Kleppen, for doing the news headlines at the top of the hour.
My pleasure.